Andrew Beach. First item on the agenda is approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is approval of the minutes for our regular meeting on January 3rd of 2012. Are there any changes to the minutes? I don't believe I was here, so you know, I'll rely upon the other commission members to have any recommended changes to the minutes.
I didn't do anything.
Right, does that mean you're moving for adoption?
Is there any changes? Okay. Changes? Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye. First is to address the commission. I see we have a big crowd tonight. Nobody here to address the commission. We will move on to old business. And first item under old business is alternative energy. Actually, I do have something for that. Just a very quick prelude to this. I've done actually did a fair amount of research, and again, I believe we are right on the cusp of dealing with something very important. Let me tell you that, literally within the last 2 months, there's probably 100 new ordinances out there. When you start Googling alternative energy and ordinances and things like that because of high energy costs and the decreasing costs of both solar energy as well as windmills. So, as I promised a couple months ago, I would try to put together a kind of a straw man ordinance for the town of Kerry Beach, which I have done. I should say that we were going to look at solar power and we were going to look at wind energy, and they're very, very different issues. So what I've done is I put together cut and paste from, I think, a couple very good towns, one up in Maine and then another one, as well as adding some things specific to the concerns expressed by the commission as well as the town council when we talk about this. And let me go ahead and pass this out. I don't think we need to talk about it tonight, but I think John, I want to give one to you too because there's some slightly technical sort of things in there. But maybe we can put this on the agenda. And here's one for Ellie. And I need one short, but that's okay.
Here, I'll get one.
All right, I can give you this because I can turn on. This is based upon realization that we do have a North Carolina ordinance or a North Carolina law actually restricting or specifying what we can do as a town. It's actually very specific in terms of allowing certain things and not allowing other things, and it's kind of moved on some other issues such as ground-mounted solar power systems. Based upon looking at what the concerns are in different communities and all that sort of thing, right, as well as what we have here at Kerry Beach, I put this together and basically it says that for a roof design, it can't go above the roof line. In fact, we want to keep it about six inches short of the roof line. We want to keep it 6 inches short of the edges of the roof edges. Kind of encourage people to put it on the backside of the side, but if the only way they can get sun exposure is to put it on the front, then I think the sense of the town council is that it should be permitted, and I believe the commission talked about that too. But, put a lot of responsibility on the zoning officer to do this. And again, this is simply a straw man type of ordinance. I'm not suggesting that this is it, but you may want to look at some of these things. In terms of ground-mounted, the ordinances that are out there, many towns simply don't allow it. Other towns say, but clearly when you look at the conversation on the web in terms of some of these ordinances that allow ground, most of the complaints have to do with ground-mounted systems. The ground-mounted systems are unattractive, they're reflective, and a whole bunch of things like that. So. What I did here is under ground-mounted systems, basically I said that they're not allowed, with the following exception, and that's where it's fall incidental systems used for solar lights and landscaping, some other stuff. And again, that this is basically from one of the ordinances that was out there. So anyway, I would suggest if it's okay with the commission that we look at this. John, you might want to look at this and start thinking about whether. This is something we want to do, or if we want to tweak these, tweak the sort of things that we have here. I also did windmills, okay, and there was a very, very aggressive push by the kind of industry that produces windmills, they put out a bunch of model ordinances. Basically, the model ordinance says, yeah, sure, you know, put them up 150 feet high and, you know, that sort of thing. So anyway, I did some more research, including actually getting on a couple websites where you could actually see the different type of windmills. And small ones are about 60 watts. They're about this size and circumference. You can get up to about 1,600 watts and go up to about, I don't know, about 4 feet or something like that. There's no question that if you're trying to generate electricity, assuming you have wind, that's the cheapest way to go. You know, for about $300, you can get a 1,600 watt generator. Wow. For about $300. You gotta have wind, obviously. But in looking at these things are noisy. So anyway, I went over to our faculty member who specializes in real estate and asked him about it. And he said that there's actually some research now that's come out that shows that windmills decrease property values. That there's some good studies out there in real estate economics that windmills or solar, or not solar, but wind power generators actually decrease property values, including these little small things that you can put on the side of your house. He also said that he's become kind of interested in this because there's one that's installed in Wrightsville Beach next to the house that his sister lives in. And he said it's a small 3 foot sort of thing, and you know, he said that you can hear that thing all night long. You know, you can close the windows, you can hear it all night long. These things are noisy. You know, so if we're going to have these things in Curie Beach, you won't be able to open your window and listen to the birds and listen to the ocean stuff like that. You'll hear the ocean.
Is that the primary reason? Because of the noise?
The noise seems to be the primary reason for the property, the decrease in property values.
It's not just the property in which it's on, but the surrounding
properties. Surrounding properties. And he said there's no research yet to show that solar systems decrease or increase surrounding property values. But he said there are a couple research articles that have been published that shows that surrounding property values are decreased by wind generation. So my suggestion is that based upon sound issues and based upon, you know, the decrease in property values and particularly the sound, he's pretty adamant how loud these things are. And if you can get on the web, anybody can do it, just Google wind systems. There's videos on there, on YouTube, people trying to sell these things, and boy, they are loud. Even small ones. I would recommend that we simply don't allow them down at Curie Beach.
All right, well, we're going to add another section on the bottom that says wind systems are not allowed in any form.
Yeah. That would be my I didn't write that in here because that would be my recommendation. And again, just something that, you know, maybe I would suggest. I mean, we're definitely on target to do this because, again, this is in Wrightsville Beach where they're already having a problem because they don't have an ordinance and some people are putting these things up facing the ocean because there's a wind coming in from the ocean and it's disrupting the neighbors and things like that. So, you know, we're right on the proper cusp in terms of dealing with some of these issues. So, you know, I would recommend that, you know, you might want to look at this, think about this in terms of the solar panels. And this is both passive and active solar panel ordinance. And this deals with residential. This doesn't really deal with commercial. And think about what we want to do with wind generated systems. But again, my recommendation is no. I mean, based upon what I heard today.
Well, the other thing similarly, you know, ground mounted solar power generators probably would reduce property values also because they're butt ugly.
Yeah, they're ugly, and they you see a lot of conversations on these websites, and they all have to do with negative characteristics of the ground mounted systems in terms of being reflective, actually generating heat into back windows and, you know, of the neighboring, and just being astoundingly unattractive.
And very industrial.
Right. But again, we realize that, you know, actually my little solar lights that around the house are actually solar systems. So that's why I put the little exception in there about solar lights and landscaping.
And I'm surprised that the exceptions on the ground mounted, the total combined square footage for ground mounted solar energy equipment cannot exceed 4 square feet per property.
I made that up.
Oh, okay.
Okay. There's
1,500 square feet or 7 acres. I mean, it's the same square footage.
Yeah. I mean, this is a straw man sort of thing. Those are exactly the sort of things that we can debate. Many of the ordinances, for example, say that it can't exceed the roof line. I put it from 12 inches below the peak of the roof. You know, I mean, these are all debatable.
This is just a starting point.
Just a starting point, absolutely. Are there any comments from the commission before we go to the next item?
Yeah, I have a what would be the next step with this, John?
Well, that was going to be our question. If this is a starting point that we need to go ahead and go through it now, if this is something that we want to present to council, or do you want me to go through it and make the changes?
I would say it's something we need to push ahead on, but I don't think it's pressing that we need to do this month. I would suggest that everybody look at this. You look at this, too, in terms of some of the, like, do we have any flat roofs in town?
Yes.
Okay, so then we've got to allow a certain amount of...
Right.
You may want to look at this and look at it from more of a technical point of view. The commission may want to think about it more from a, you know, the way this is written, it kind of says that if you're going to put it on the front side of a house, that you need permission to do it. From the zoning, either the planning commission or the zoning officer, we can simply say it's allowed. You know, and just, you know, so these are the things that you may want to think about this over the next month. The other thing I would strongly recommend that you do is get on the website and look and see how unattractive ground-mounted systems are, and also check out these windmills, and, you know, listen to the sound of them, because all the ordinances that I could see are always dealing with the sound. You know, they say it can't be over 40 decibels if it's within 100 feet, it can't be over 60 decibels. And, you know, I can see us running into a situation where John is out there with his little meter, his sound meter, measuring decibel levels of windows.
Okay. If you would email this to me?
Yeah, I'll be glad to do that.
I'll make my changes in red and forward them to Josie, and then she can put it in your packet for next month.
Okay. And then what I would suggest for next month is then we clean it up, and then the next step would be, I guess the next step would be to present to the town council and see if they want to go ahead for a public hearing.
That's great. Right.
But it is very timely, I think, looking at what I saw on the web in the last couple days. Okay. Agenda item number B under old business, potential B1 expansion. As I said, I presented this to the town council at the last meeting to get a sense that before we push ahead on what would be a very costly process in terms of time and effort on the part of the commission, that everybody was on board in terms of this. I think there was a good discussion at the town council, and they basically said, yes, go ahead and do it. It wasn't a vote, but there was kind of a consensus as we moved down the town, the five members of the new council, and they all said, yes, they want to push ahead on this. And so, you know, that's where we're at right now in terms of probably continuing the public hearings to start with and, you know, maybe formalize some sort of plan in terms of looking at this in a very legalistic way, because ultimately we're going to have, if it is something that we want to do, it would require... basically a zoning change. Open for discussion. And these are some of the issues. And as part of that, by the way, you know, we talk about form-based planning. Several of the members of the new council weren't really familiar with form-based planning, but obviously the purpose of expanding a commercial district into a multi-use type of thing would require form-based planning process in terms of, you know, making sure if there's anything new that was built there that it looks in a certain way, or if anything was added to the existing buildings it would look a certain way. There are other issues clearly related to seeing what other communities have done. In fact, I downloaded one that I'll pass on to everybody else. You know, it seemed to be a great concern in terms of coordinating parking issues with SLAP. So those are kind of the issues I think that are identified right here. So any further discussion about the next step, what we should be doing on this? Because the council definitely did say go ahead, and this seems to be our kind of big project, I think, over the next year to do this.
Well, it seems to me that that we need to formulate what our goal is going to be and what the objectives we would need to obtain in order to meet those goals. So if we said we ultimately want to come up with a recommendation on the zoning change, style, form-based, whatever the case might be, that we're going to recommend to town council to take to the community, then how would we come about coming up with both the zoning, the potential ordinance, the drafts, the renderings and all that in order to have something to look at? And so, you know, there's a whole process. I think there would be in place here a step, lockstep kind of process. So goal setting, and then how do we get to the goals would be, I think, the first thing we need to be looking at. It seems to me it's almost a workshop kind of a process to figure out where we want to go to with this.
Just very quickly, we have this potential B1 expansion. I made it quite clear that this is not a B1 expansion. We wouldn't want to do that. But this is an additional business zoning. It's not an expansion of existing zoning. But it would be an additional zone. I think I call it B10 or B7 or something like that.
B7.
Yeah. You know, I guess the issue, we've already had one workshop. Would it make sense to schedule additional, at least one more additional workshop before we start kind of fleshing out design and language and form-based planning and all that sort of thing? Or do we want to have something a little more concrete that we would take to the workshop?
I think we have to figure out whether, are we just going to do one lot off of how the house is going to split?
You're talking about workshop with council, right?
Workshop with public, right? Like what we did last time.
I think we need to have something a little more concrete, some sort of plan where we can say, look, this is what, here's what we started with. What are your
comments? These are the properties, you know, I can need to be like, these are the properties that are going to be included in it. This is where it's going to be. And maybe a rendering or something, and then that's.
You have some boundaries set up.
Yeah.
Well, can we? Is it legal under sunshine law for the five of us to go somewhere and look at a town?
Sure.
Does that have to be announced? Does that constitute a meeting in any way, shape, or form if we're all together?
Well, you're not elected officials. So
that is the dividing line. I don't know.
I think we're covered under the same rules as elected officials as a planning commission.
As the commission.
Yeah. I think only the planning commission is.
Not sure. I'd have to ask.
But if you did do something like that, it's not like you're making any decisions.
No.
The other thing is we could go in groups of two. As long as we don't have a quorum, I think we could go in groups of two and take pictures.
In the past, has the planning commission looked into the Main Street small town projects? And,
yes.
And gotten information about those or visited those?
I haven't visited. When we were thinking about trying to get grants and get a, it's not being certified, but recognized as a Main Street by the USA, several of us got on the website and kind of looked at that. But that's right when there was this transition of town manager and stuff like that. It kind of fell by the wayside.
Did you notice, you know, with Wendell or any of them on there, did they have like form-based planning where that was brought together?
There's kind of two issues. One is the zoning issue. Okay, the zoning issue is if we're going to make it B7, you're deciding actually what properties would be covered under that and the appropriate process that's required under state law to do a zoning type change. Then the other question is, do we want to have an additional overlay? I mean, it would be what we'd call an overlay for that particular B7, or maybe even expand it beyond. We could even expand it, you know, just not to B7, but we could also move to B1. That would require some sort of form-based planning. Now, I actually found a really good one when I was looking at the solar energy, and I downloaded it. I don't think I printed it off. But I actually downloaded it, and it was very simple. It just had some pictures, and then the kind of the recommendations were, well, if you're gonna, you can't have a single roof line. You had to have break up your roof line. It's some very kind of simple rules that probably were more than 3 or 4 pages long. And then you can have some form-based planning that are 50 page long in terms of very, very specific type of things. So. But that would be the overlay. It's a different issue technically than the zoning issue in terms of the overlay of the ordinances required in certain design elements.
But it be really nice if we had them going.
No, always in the past, and that might be something we need to ask our town attorney, but streets were always the boundary lines for any six zoning.
I think, and that was talked to the council, I think the general feeling I got was that if you're going to do a multi-use zoning, it wouldn't be street by street, but it would be the adjacent properties to the street coming down. It wouldn't be the backside, but it would just simply be the adjacent properties, because...
But they may have established buffers between that property and the one behind it. I mean, as you're looking at a lot of different things, but it's...
If you're calling to a...
If you've got a house right behind a B7 or whatever district it might be, you're not going to want a business right in the backyard, for instance.
Well, remember, these businesses, it's also residential. These are multi-use, so it has a potential. Not everybody has to do it, but they have the potential for on the ground floor light retail. I mean, we specify what would it be, gift shops or maybe a coffee shop or an art gallery or something like that. But then on the second and third floor, there would be residential. Well, we have a multi-use, so it's not like putting in a real...
I think we need to look at... I think it's going to be a problem getting a fit in one lot. Mm-hmm. If you have a coffee shop, you're going to have a dumpster, you're going to have recycling, mm-hmm. you have to have parking for your residents.
And clean up supplies out back.
And I don't see how you're going to fit all that on a 50 by 100 lot. Mm-hmm. But if that's, because you're going to have, we can't waive the parking for a resident. I mean, we can waive it for the business.
Could I suggest that maybe each one of us do a little bit of research in next month and kind of bring in some examples of what other communities have done in multi-use, you know, very small scale. I mean, certainly the big cities have these very complex multi-use kind of things. In fact, I was up in Raleigh this weekend, and beautiful development that's going on. It's all multi-use up there and stuff like that. It's Mayfair type of stuff, but for miles. You know, I mean, really, really well done. I mean, that clearly is a different scale than what we're talking about here, but maybe... Yeah, since we're talking about multi-use, let's find some communities that do have a multi-use component on a very small scale, and we do a little bit of research and, you know, kind of each bring in some examples next time.
I'm good with that. I mean, I'm certainly good with that.
Can we get some advice from Andy just to see if we do have to go the full block if we decide to change the zone?
He was sitting right there, huh? But he didn't bring that up.
Because, you know, if you look at Arizona map, the streets are all the same lines for any zoning. I'm not sure what that's written down at or what.
We had talked about that, and that was just a... I have never seen a zoning situation like that. You know, every zoning I have seen has been not street by street as the boundaries, but actually down the middle, because, you know, the backside... You know, you may have a residential street, but the way we have it, that might be a commercial zoning. And you actually have a bunch of residential properties, you know, sitting there. So it's kind of unusual that what we have actually in Curie Beach here.
Man, I'm not saying it's in the rules anywhere, but that's the way it's always been right there. So mm-hmm. It's something that we need to...
Not all are separated by streets, Tim. Most are, but a lot of the new area back in here, a lot of the zoning line actually runs right down between two lots,
okay.
You can see it in the Sea Watch neighborhood, you can see it in Curie Beach Village, up around Trout Lane area.
That's strictly residential, so that makes a difference or not, I'm not sure.
Well, not when you look at the general thinking scheme of things. Right now, this is zoned RA2 and RA1 over here, and RA3, that's RA2. And some of the uses that are allowed in there are business district uses.
But, you know, both of those are RA2 right now. It's in that street. It's still pretty much, I'm not sure about that area right there. That's a street right there. Goes around that corner. Street right there. Street right there.
No, this is the one property.
Yeah, so there's a lot right there and two
right
there.
Yeah, but this is the property line right here. Right? This is the zoning line. It doesn't go on the street. So the RA1A versus the RA1A right there. Anyway, those are things to think about. I would suggest that as a starting point, as we at least get some examples, and, you know, having written several different ordinances, boy, I'd say have an example of what other people have done so we're not recreating the wheel, so to speak, is really the way to go. But, you know, I've already found, I think, probably one or two pretty good examples of a very small community that has form-based planning and a multi-use zoning sort of thing that, you know, I can find out a little more information on and stuff like that. But if everybody wants to kind of look at something, you know, I think that'd be a good starting point to have our discussions about some of these issues. Yeah, for example, I don't know if you can put it on a 50 by 100 lot. I would tend to think you could, but you don't think we can. And these are the things that we can see what other
communities... I think it depends on the business.
Yeah.
You know, if the business requires to have a dumpster and recycling, then I think you're going to have issues with parking.
Yeah, and usually multi-use parking or multi-use zoning has a different parking requirement. You kind of eliminate a lot of the requirements for parking associated with multi-use. You know, but these are things we can look at from other communities. I mean, is that the consensus? Because I think we could spend a lot of time debating it if we don't.
Yeah, I'm going
to... That's a pretty good model.
I'll see if I can talk to Bosco and see if we can draw a sketch. You know, take one lot and put a little mixed use on it and be a little more professional than the one that I did last time. You know, see... You know, maybe you can do... If it's on one lot, if it's on two lots. You see, draw the scale.
If all five of us are coming back with samples and information and copies of ordinances and, you know, zoning plans and all this kind of stuff from all these communities, how are we going to bring all this together in some kind of common sense collection of information that we're going to draw some conclusion from? It seems to me that we perhaps can bring all that back and present it and make copies of it to go to everybody else. But at some point, we've got to sit down and walk through each one of those plans and say, okay, this is relevant, this is not relevant, let's accept this piece, let's don't accept this piece, and move stuff into a track that's saying, okay, yes, this, all of this is crap, this 10% we're keeping, and it's going to be used to develop whatever we're going to develop in some kind of a mixed-use B7 component here.
Well, I think that's why we need to do that legwork and that research first, and before we jump into a public hearing
on it. Because we really did, one of the things that did come out of the last public hearing is that it would have been nice to show them what we're talking about, you know, and that would have been a real benefit. And even if we don't have to fine tune it, we just need something to show folks and get the feedback. And again, this is not something we have to do over the next month or two. This, I think, is really our assignment over the next 10 months is to do this. That's my sense, is that it's not, you know, this is something we were asked to push ahead on, but this is a huge bite that we're taking off right here, I think.
No, I agree with you.
You know, without a large staff that can go out and do the footwork for us, we're actually doing the footwork. John, unless you want to go.
And another issue we probably need to keep in mind and look at is if you have a business, say, on the ground floor and residential on two floors above it, if that's going to be, for instance, two rental units, whether it's full-time or seasonal rentals, think about the parking issues we have now with the house.
Yeah.
So that's something else we could probably get to.
And the other thing, too, is that, you know, part of this will be converting existing property too. You know, I mean, somebody could take an existing residence that's already on 50 by 100 and say, no, I want to put a... So we've got to look at it both ways for new building going in as well as conversion of existing property, because most of those properties are already built.
And what's the problem with building something new anyway? But, you know, you're never trying to open it up.
All right, so anyway, is that okay to have a assignment that we should kind of maybe try to find two that are out there of small scale, multi-use type of zoning, and we'll come back in the next meeting and almost maybe even have a little mini workshop among ourselves to kind of get a sense of being able to put something together.
So probably workshop, work sessions, or anything that requires us not to do this with, you know, informing the public that we're about to go through all of this. I mean, I'm not trying to hide anything from them, it's just it will make the process so laborious we'll never get through it.
No, I think this is, involves a lot of research, like you said, that we don't really have big staff to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
I don't think that's...
And as long as identified on our agenda, I think Yes,
anybody can come to your meetings and be part of that discussion.
And when we actually get something that we do want to present in an open workshop, that would be similar to what we've done before, in terms of workshop.
If you suggest changing something, then you've got to have your public hearing, make sure it doesn't pop.
But I think we're too preliminary. All right, agenda item number 5C, P&Z Committee says member term limits and revisit future member appointment procedures with council. Emily, maybe you can expand that. My sense is that P&Z, the last meeting I went through, is that P&Z is kind of excluded from that discussion to some extent, that we're going to have a five-year... You know, there's a lot of discussion about the term limits at that joint work session. I think that all the chairs attended. But P&Z was specifically excluded from that term limit discussion because we're somewhat regulated by state rules and things like that. So I'm not sure if I can add anything more to this.
Yes, because I also asked about you guys being able to interview candidates and make recommendations, and I was told that the law requires council to do that, so that's why they took it away from you.
That's not true. I don't think that's true.
It was not.
I mean, my sense of that was.
It was done that way. It was done that way in this town. From the beginning of time until, what, 2 years ago, so.
No, that's not true. I think it has more with internal issues.
Exactly.
Than laws from the state.
Even if we do make those appointments, if we want to call on you for your recommendations, we should be allowed to. So.
We can't make the appointments, but we never made the appointments. We would interview people and make recommendations and counsel. So
and
we've never appointed anybody.
I would still like to pursue that.
So. Okay.
I mean, depending on how you guys feel. You don't want to be involved in it, that's okay. But
We didn't agree with this. It was pretty good, Dennis, as a committee that we could agree with what they were doing. We did our interview and we appointed one. There wasn't two. We appointed one for us at the council. We didn't appoint it. We recommended.
Right.
And then council would either approve it or deny it. That's kind of the way we're running here.
So,
I mean, that's how I feel about it.
As far as your terms, when your term was up last spring or something, is that right? Last spring or last summer?
I think so.
And so when you were reappointed,
yeah, me too.
That didn't change the time, did it? I mean, it still started.
I think you reappointed
that date forward.
Years.
It didn't start like last month or something.
Right.
So, yeah, I think as long as you keep it consistent, that's.
So when they talk about term limits, are they talking about doing 5 years and then you're off?
No. What the discussion was is that there are all these committees, they all have term limits, some are staggered, some are not staggered. It was becoming a real mess. And so there's a general consensus that basically if a committee member wants to continue on, and the committee agrees, they basically continue on. P&Z being kind of a more of a legal type of issue was out of that discussion. And so there was no real decision about P&Z other than perhaps what we've done, which is at the end of your term, it's really up to the council, I guess, to decide if they want to interview, because remember, that's not taken out of our hands. I guess it's up to the council to decide if they want to reappoint the person or if they want to open it up for full interviews or something like that. And I think it's, right now, it would have to be the council's decision as to what to do. But P&Z was specifically excluded from the consensus of how all the other committees are going to deal with the term limits issue.
And the recreation committee, because they're established by law.
Okay. And the Board of Appeals, too, I think, was excluded.
Yes.
Yeah.
Board of Justice.
Okay, so there's really nothing more to add other than that. Then when your limit comes up, it's up to the council to reappoint you if you're still interested, or open it up, or not appoint you, or whatever they want to do, because they have the right to do that right now. Okay, agenda item D, John, update regarding North Carolina Flood Rating Program.
Yes, the last information that I received was that I had the girl come down again, and she went through some more paperwork right around town with me, and the last thing she said to me was, I'm going to recommend that the town of Torrey Beach be accepted into the community rating system for floodplain management. She said that the town was already doing everything that they were supposed to do as far as maintaining records, obtaining the correct records, and she didn't see any reason why we couldn't be a part of it. I've not seen anything since then. That's been almost a month ago. So it is what it is there. Previously, we had talked about putting in some sort of freeport because that would gain a certain amount of percentage in the CRS program, and it would save some homeowners insurance on their premiums. Since we talked about that, I found out that's actually a new building code that's coming out, that there is a mandatory 1 foot freeboard on all properties in the floodplain. The North Carolina Home Builders has been making phone calls to DOI, as has the Realtors Association, fighting it, is what I understand. So I don't know if it will actually come to fruition or not, but as of right now, starting March 1st, as I understand it, there should be a 1 foot freeboard for every property that's in the floodplain. So if we do become a part of the CRS, that will be a benefit to homeowners that are in the floodplain and do maintain floodplain coverage. And you'll get a reduced rate because of that freeboard. That's the way we understand it.
So, will we be able to appeal that in addition to the, you know, the builders? Or?
Yes, the town of Torrey Beach could apply for an exemption from that ruling with North Carolina DOI. If council directed me to do so, I would do that.
Be a 1 foot freeboard? Does it affect every old front property being built?
It will, yeah.
How would that affect? Because your concern about freeboard is that changes the roof structure.
It'll lose a floor.
It'll change everything.
Yeah, it changes everything. Yeah, it basically loses a floor, possibly.
Yep, possibly, yes.
Especially when
it raises everyone up a foot.
At a minimum, you would only have 8 foot ceilings in every one of your floors, which may not be a big deal to some people, but others probably would.
And further discussion of, all right. Agenda item E, I'm not familiar with this. John, was this yours also, the driveway limitation?
Yes, sir, we brought this up last month also. Had a request come into the office for a turnaround on a new driveway on the oceanfront. Our ordinance says the driveway is located in the setback area of residential lots and shall be limited to 36 feet in width. We put that into an ordinance a year and a half ago. The purpose was to try to cut down on rainwater being shed off the properties onto the road, number one, and number two was to hopefully keep so many cars being parked all over the property.
Create a whole image of cement.
Yes. Yeah. So had a property owner come to me and says, look, my driveway is only going to be 29 foot wide. I'd like to have this turnaround that juts out 10 feet off further out to the side. That's 7 feet wide, so I can back the car in and pull out and pull in. Didn't really address that in ordinance. I called Alan about it, and we spoke about it for a little bit. And what we did, in general, his driveway is 36 feet in width, including the turnaround. But we felt like we ought to maybe go into more depth with the ordinance, provide some kind of stipulation for that. The turnarounds, and then also at the same time we've had requests for using pavers instead of concrete. So in other words, can I have 28 foot of concrete driveway and then another 10 foot of pavers? Is that allowed? I've been saying no. And then the final thing was, we've got some people on Atlantic Avenue that actually just installed a header style driveway instead of concrete altogether, which I think is very, very good. I really like the idea and the concept. So that's why I brought it before council or commission after I talked to Alan about it.
Did you have a recommendation as to if we wanted to revise it, what the language would be?
I do not have a recommendation at this time, actually.
Would you like to send us one or something?
This is kind of informational. I want to know if y'all think this is something we should keep on talking about.
Well, I mean, the two reasons, and I think the two reasons is kind of equal, was we had to deal with floor area ratio and density. So that's why we made the driveway, because we couldn't do it with floor area ratio. So the only way to control density was by parking in the size of the driveway. And the other issue was the water runoff. If you put address style driveways in, I mean, I think that's great. But do you want one that's 40 feet wide and cars parked all over it?
Yeah, okay.
It's a tough one. You know, a turnaround is a turnaround. It's people, I think people are trying to make it a parking space. And I think that's one of the issues. I mean, when you have a turnaround in the driveway, it's still a 3-point turn. You have to use the whole driveway to turn around because you can't just go in there and then get out. You have to go in, back up, go in, back up. It takes 3 times to get out of a driveway. And it takes the whole driveway. I mean, he was able to do it. It'd still be 36 feet wide with the turnaround. But up. Doing papers, we're not even allowing them.
Oh, I'm just
I'm just bringing stuff.
No, I know. I get these questions on a daily basis.
I mean, the way papers are supposed to be installed is 12 inches of ABS material down.
It's so just like concrete.
I mean, it's actually probably more dense than concrete. Yeah. If you think about it. So.
Well, let's leave it alone for right now, then.
So you're just going to continue to disapprove them?
As they come in?
Well, his was probably the biggest driveway. And he made it work, didn't he?
Yeah, he made it work.
He's got a turnaround.
Yep.
I mean, at first it was, if he couldn't have his turnaround, I was concerned that that's a safety feature on Fort Fisher Boulevard. I think if somebody wants a turnaround, they should have one so they don't have to back out into traffic.
But then it's like what you said to me, is you said, you know, I have a turnaround, but I can't use it unless I'm the only car in the driveway.
Right.
And so the address papers would be better for stormwater runoff?
The Hatteras style driveway would be. Pavers would not, in my opinion. I don't know. I wish everybody would go down there on Atlantic Avenue and check out the new driveway. And I bring that up.
Where is that?
313 Atlantic Avenue.
313?
You know, we have to spend so much time remodeling.
Oh, okay.
Right down there and check that out. And I'm not trying to be an advocate for this, but maybe there's something we can do to promote it a little more. Well, I believe it would be good for our stormwater runoff.
What can they put under that wood structure?
That's packed dirt.
Just packed dirt?
Yeah.
Like cushion run or something underneath that?
No, they didn't do that. It's just packed dirt. They got every bit of that in front of that house is concrete all the way across. They ripped every bit of it out, tamped the dirt down, and built these 8x10 sections that are, you can pull them up separately if you need to, if you got one sinking down or something like that.
dirt or sand?
Well, then they packed sand all in between after they got through. Yes. What they are is 2x4 stood up on end.
Mm-hmm. 1x4.
Quarter board in between each one. I like it. Looks good.
It's great.
What are they calling it? It's a whole.
We're calling it the Hatteras style.
Hatteras style.
Okay. Yes, Hatteras style driveway. And
So the issue is not the Hatteras style driveway. No. The issue is the Hatteras style driveway that exceeds
the
maximum width.
It was just
the maximum width issue, not a manufacturing issue.
Right, and that one actually, I made him cut his down to 36 feet when he changed his around.
Okay.
I mean, it's something to think about. And all these two came up at the same time. And once he finished his Hatteras style driveway, I just started thinking, you know, maybe this is something we should try to start promoting out of town.
As far as stormwater runoff, I can see a benefit there myself.
Yeah, sure.
It's all in there.
What's the cost?
Drainage in there, man.
What's the cost differential, do you know?
I did not ask him what's the cost. Alan probably gave you What's the normal driveway cost, Alan?
$3,000 for regular concrete. It's probably more than that, isn't it?
By the time you do the labor.
Yeah, I was going to say, labor alone.
I bet you're looking at double.
Then you get into an issue of, well, that's pervious, so is stone. So why can't we just stone the whole front of the property?
There's a lot of pervious.
There's a lot of pervious
material that could be used for driveways, you know, for.
So, I mean, do you specifically call it a wood pattern style driveway as a sample, or do you call it, you know, if somebody wants to have a pervious driveway, then they can cover their whole property with rock.
So you're just talking about gravel or what? Are you talking about gravel?
Yeah.
Okay, is there a specific motion that we want to, any further discussion on this, or you want to just kind of table this discussion?
I would say just table it.
Table?
Okay. Just keep it out there that we're not giving it up or down, just.
So we won't table it, we'll just continue as old business till next.
Yeah, I mean, it's up to, if you feel we need to get more specific, then we will, but it's kind of your call. You deal with it.
Okay.
But if it's doable the way it is.
All right, so unless there's any objection, we'll continue agenda item number 5E until our next monthly meeting.
But we're all going to take a look at it.
I'll drive down. Okay.
Yeah, please.
All right, any new business?
Is there a motion and a second for that?
Yeah, I guess it is technically a motion. I'll make the motion to continue. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. New business? Hearing none, member items? Any member items? Okay, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. And I second.
Okay, which one was that? Who made the motion to adjourn? Who second?
Who made a motion
to adjourn?
Motion, second.
Second.
All right.
Here you go. March 6th is our next meeting.
Boy, after listening to those windmills, I think my neighbor's going to put a big windmill next to my house.